distinction to the role. Different players, different strokes. But let me tell. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. It's 9:07, and wow, we keep filling up the room with celebrities.
All those kind, yeah.
Celebrities, as we say down east. And we've got Brother Rufus is with us. Dr. Patrick McMillan, retired Clemson professor, is with us. Andrea Lane is with us from Bakersville, Mitchell County, master gardener there, of course. And we have the auditor of the state of North Carolina, Dave Bolick. And Dave, we're so honored to have you on WPTF always. I've already talked on the air about your dad, Tony Rigsby, and I worked for your dad. He was, we all loved him. He was like a drill sergeant sometimes.
Well, that's what they call me at the auditor's office. So maybe I get that on.
I think you probably do, but we learned so much from him. I was Mario Dell was doing our morning show host back in the 80s and for 30 years, was doing the tailgate show before the NC State game, and Mario decided it was time to give that up. So I took over. And the powers that be decided that it was not going to be at the stadium. It was going to be in the studio. And I had to host it and run my own controls. And your dad sat right behind me. He was breathing down my neck. And I tell you, if I messed up, he let me know it. I think I did okay.
Well, I don't know if I'm that bad.
I know, but... But you know, I there's also another story.
I appreciate the accountability.
He was. You had to be accountable to him. So years later, my daughter was in the fifth or sixth grade, third grade, somewhere in there, and I took her to work. It was take your daughter to work day, and so I took her reluctantly to this place, and I had to go out on an assignment to the. Superintendent Public Instructions Office. The State Board was having a meeting, and Bobby Etheridge was introducing some new testing standards for whatever grade my daughter happened to be in. And so I got on the elevator and with her, and there's Bobby Etheridge, big as life there, and one of his aides. And his aide sized her up and said, "What grade are you in?" And by golly, they put her right up in front with the superintendent. And your dad was covering that for WTVD. And afterwards, he did a little story because he said, "Ain't nothing else going on, so let me do a story with your daughter." And about that, and you know, so he was such a great guy.
Well, I appreciate
so many
that.
Ways. But you.
And he had a lot of nice things to say about you guys.
Well, that's surprising.
On a regular basis. How about you, Rufus? He had a lot of nice things to say about you, too.
He was a taskmaster with Rufus, too.
He kept me accountable, and as everybody else, because he knew when Dave Bolick was coming,
yeah,
you better get your facts straight. Now, he would be fair to you as long as you kept your facts straight and didn't shoot the bull. And
that's hard for you, Rufus, to not shoot the bull.
It has been very hard for me over the years to keep it within shoot bull line straight. But one thing about Dave Jr. and Dave Sr., Dave Jr. has a lot more hair than Dave Sr. had.
I do. Not much more, but a little more.
And he's a little skinnier than you, Dave.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
I've been on the road.
I've been eating barbecue. And you just gave me potato candy.
I was really worried that that the auditor was coming up here so willingly, and I was worried that we here at the Weekend Gardener had done something wrong. We're okay, I assume.
You're in good shape.
Okay.
Well, we don't receive any state funds, do we?
No.
Not that I know of.
Maybe some advertising funds, but that's
not. You know, Dave, I want to go back and remember at one time Speaker Jim Black offered my super kids, which you know a lot about.
Yes, I do.
offered to give us money for the Super Kids, and I said, no, I don't believe so. I think we need to keep it private because I don't want the state auditor after me.
Yeah.
And I know now that you have a policy that if you receive state funds, it's auditable, right?
Well, yeah, if any entity receives any public funds. So right. That we wanted to make sure that there was some clarity on that, particularly yeah. On the municipal and county level. The new statute that sort of clarifies that language really didn't give us any additional authority. And I actually had conversations with Beth Wood and Les Merritt about that, and they agreed it didn't give us any more authority. But
right.
I think the new statute clears it up and makes it a little easier
very
for
plain,
our
yes.
team. And plain, yeah, very plain. And we modernized some of the language to use computer databases instead of paper records and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's been, I mean, we've got a lot of authority. I mean, the thing is we've only got a certain number of resources there in the office, so we want to pick and choose stuff that's relevant and that's
yeah.
going to actually make a difference and an impact.
Well, before Michael asks you, I'm going to. How much are you using AI?
A lot. We really are. I mean, we put jet fuel on AI, and that has been something that has been different. Part of our statutory thing is we actually did, we are exempt now from the Division of Information Technology, of which you, as Secretary of State and Attorney General, were very familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
So we do cooperate with them and deal with them, but we do not have to go through their procurement process, so we can move a lot quicker. So we're using AI now. And we are by all accounts, and our team, we have a 10-person team that actually audits the computer and information systems across the state of North Carolina. So we've got a pretty good finger on the fact that we are leading the state in the implementation of artificial intelligence. We've got a full enclosed artificial intelligence environment within the computer apparatus of the state auditor's office. So we're running complex data analytics right now.
Are you using AI, Rufus?
I guess when I talk to Shirley, I do.
I guess you are.
It is a different kind of way of doing business.
You know, I think Mr. Curtis is probably thinking about an AI host for the Weekend Gardener. Do you think it's
my nephew
would be
said, boring. Uncle Rufus, it's not Shirley, it's Siri.
Siri, yeah, okay. All right, whatever you say. Now, as I mentioned, Andrea Lane is from Mitchell County, lives in Mitchell County, and they really caught it up there.
They
and
did.
I know that you have been touring the state, and you've been in Western North Carolina.
I have.
A great deal.
I've been to Bakersville. I've been to Burnsville. I've been all over the western part of the state. In fact, last Saturday, I was in Hot Springs for their Christmas parade, and Hot Springs was really blown out. Their downtown and their
yeah.
bridge was blown out.
Yes.
They've got a new bridge under construction. But let me tell you something, and you've got mountain folks right here. That's a resilient group of people
yeah.
in Western North Carolina.
Doggone right.
And you know, to go walk down the main street of Hot Springs and to shake hands with folks and see people there, you would never have known a year ago the difficulties that they were dealing with just because of the positive attitude that the mm-hmm. folks there in Madison County have. You know, but from my end, our job is to make sure that the money that we are appropriating for use in the recovery from Helene is spent properly. And we're monitoring that on our website through a dashboard. We've used AI, and so in the coming weeks, right after the first of the year, we're going to issue a series of reports to show exactly how taxpayer dollars are being spent. Because I really will say this. Look, North Carolina does a fantastic job, from what I've seen, on the disaster audit side with the 911, the first response. We spent a lot of money and we spent a lot of hours training and equipping first responders to put people to bring people out of harm's way, to stabilize the situation. Where North Carolina and, quite frankly, a lot of states fall to the wayside on is the long-term recovery.
Yeah.
And how we organize that and where we put resources to get long-term return on investment. And North Carolina does not have a singular strategy on long-term recovery, which is really important because we've got to be able to rebuild businesses, communities, and infrastructure so that folks that live there have a place to go to work, they can get to church, they can get their mail, and they can get in and out of the region so they stay
there.
Schools, yeah. They want them to be able to stay there. We don't want people to leave because businesses aren't there. And you know, we've taken a look, and over the coming months, it's sort of a longer project, is to take a look at the 1999 Floyd floods across eastern North Carolina and take a look. And we see this on the Local Government Commission, of which you sat. You sat on the LGC, and that deals with municipalities. And we've seen the fading away of a lot of small municipalities in eastern North Carolina over the years because of inadequate long-term response to Hurricane Floyd's floods that devastated eastern North Carolina. So we want to be able to take some of the lessons not learned from 99, some of the lessons not learned in the Matthew and Florence recovery, and make sure that we put them to positive work so that we don't make those same mistakes with Helene in western North Carolina. We need a unified, consistent response. I have been an advocate that all members of the Council of State, and the governor has said this too at a Council of State meeting when he went around the room, every member of the Council of State, of which you, Rufus, have held two Council of State positions, every single person in the Council of State plays a vital role in that long-term recovery.
No question.
And it's time to marshal those resources together and get a unified response. So I'm going to work really hard over the next few months on that.
You were speaking about the Local Government Commission, Dave. As you very well know, if they get bad enough, the state can come in and take over a municipality, something like that.
That's correct.
And it seems to me like that you would have a parallel duty along with the LGC in some of these cases to have a great working relationship.
Yeah, we have a great working relationship, particularly with a lot of municipalities. I was talking to Tony on the way in about the city of Cary. I mean, they've had some well-publicized issues in their municipal finances. And we sent an audit and an investigation team into there, and we're working cooperatively with their new administration, with the elected mayor and the city council there to make sure that we can tell the full story and find out exactly what's going on with the finances of Cary. When the auditor shows up, it's not always, we're here to get you.
Right.
What we really want is we want to be able to show up and say, hey, let's get to the facts and figure out what's going on so we can move forward in a positive way.
All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. Well, we're back on WPTF, the Weekend Gardener. And Patrick McMillan, Dr. Patrick McMillan, retired Clemson professor, is with us, and Brother Rufus, and our state auditor in North Carolina, Dave Bolick. And Dave, you were just mentioning something off the air that was interesting and certainly caught Dr. McMillan's attention about okra.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you were right. Earlier in the morning, I was riding in listening to you. I don't have much time to garden, but my mama was a gardener, and I was a kid. We lived for a time in Eden, North Carolina, because, as you said, my dad was in radio and television, and he was in radio back then in Rockingham County, and we had a garden in the backyard that was fairly large, had a big piece of land. Then we had a garden across the street on the edge of a tobacco field where the neighbors would rent, you know, we rented a big swath of that and would also pick wild blackberries that grew along the edge of the tobacco field. But we grew okra and I'd go pick that okra and I remember there being a lot more hair on the okra back in the day.
Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well,
yeah, I mean, you seemed interested in that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe so, you were thinking the same
prickly,
thing.
It was very prickly, Doc. It was very prickly.
Prickly, right. Gloves. So almost one of the most popular, and I'm so glad to get this question because I did work at Clemson for 20 years. And one of the most important okra grown commercially is one that was developed at Clemson called Clemson Spineless. And that's part of why you see, like, from years and years ago to today, the okra varieties that are coming out are really bred to have less of those little irritating hairs. Oh, yeah. Which is when, as the okra, like wild okra, as it matures, it's really tough hair on that okra. And selections that were bred horticulturally through research, like Clemson Spineless, which is almost everybody's okra. If you plant okra these days, it's usually Clemson Spineless, bred to have softer fur, fuzz, trichomes on the on the pods, and less of it. So it's been selection, and that's how we get. You know, it's just amazing selections. How you select something to be bigger, or you know, when you think about it, like all species of squash, right?
Yeah,
zucchini, crookneck. Patty pan squash, all the different types of squash that we think of, and they're all the same species.
Audrey, do you have spineless okra in Bakersville?
You know, we were having a conversation, my husband and I, with others, saying that we don't even see okra up here in the mountains.
Oh.
Like, it's not offered in restaurants.
Huh.
We don't hear about it in people's gardens.
Oh, you need to have some. You need
okra,
some.
That's what I was taught. Rufus, my mama grew okra.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I grew okra, and it was a lot more. It was a lot more syrupy on the inside. There was a lot more juice in there.
Yeah. I happen to love it. That's one.
Well,
of the
I like it when it's deep fat
about.
Fried.
Yeah. Well, it'll grow real well in Mitchell County. You just have a little less of a growing season, so you don't get quite the yield you do down here.
Well, yeah. I would tell you one of the things I try to do is audit restaurants. I put audit in quotes. You're talking about my weight up here. I'm not that heavy, by the way. I've lost
you're not
a little
at
bit
all.
Since the election. But I'll tell you, there is a lot of good okra. Tupelo Honey in Asheville has some great okra.
Yeah,
ooh, I will tell you. They really do.
Well, there's a Tupelo Honey over here at Cameron Village.
There sure is. Mm-hmm. Great okra. They used to fry it long ways. They would cut it horizontal.
Is that kind of like the long horizontal pipe?
Horizontal pump.
Yeah, the pump.
Horizontal pump.
Well, I don't know.
So I missed the part on Dave's mama.
She grew okra. We were talking about the hair on the okra, and the doc was telling us that the Clemson Spineless –
They got rid of it. Let me tell you, the Gamecocks loved it when we came out with something called Spineless for a Clemson product.
I bet so. So what else did she grow?
She grew squash and pole beans.
And then
butter beans.
Yeah, y'all use fat.
They
back.
Call them limas up north. I call them
butter beans. Butter beans all the way. So did she use fatback or
she did?
Season
she
them?
Used fat
good
back.
For her.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, loving them on faith.
Well, now your father-in-law and your mother-in-law, they lived in Asheville for a while.
That's for a long time.
When he worked for the state.
Yep.
And what was it division he was in?
He was the Commerce Division. And my brother-in-law, Gardner, worked for you. He was an attorney in your office.
Totally. But now,
so I got a lot of connections in the ring.
Was he right after he left your office? Or was he okay when he left your office?
Oh, absolutely. Gardner is a very, very productive individual. Very lively. A red-headed guy.
Yeah.
And,
a lot of fun, and he worked with Kevin Howell, who is now the Chancellor of NC State.
Chancellor.
Oh wow! Okay.
Now, as I recall, though, your mother-in-law and father-in-law did some gardening because we talked
about
it one time.
We'll talk about that after the break. Okay. You're on WPTF. Yeah. That's where we are, isn't it? Yeah, WPTF. You're listening to the Weekend Gardener. I'm Mike Raley, I think. back on WPTF with Weekend Gardener. Mike Rayleigh here. Rufus Edmonston is joining us. And Patrick McMillan, formerly of Clemson University for about 20 years, did a TV show down there, got Emmys and all that stuff. And we have our auditor of North Carolina, Dave Bolick, who was nice enough to come by and bring some Christmas cheer here and give us a state of North Carolina, tell us what's going on in North Carolina through his office, and it was pretty exciting. But we've also gotten on a spineless okra thing here.
And, yeah, we have.
We want to expand on that. But
do you want to get back on the spines?
No, we don't have to. I mean, we need to delve more into to Dave's mama's garden. She grew butter beans and pole beans.
Squash. She had some zucchini.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
My grandma made zucchini bread.
Nice.
And so, yeah. And my grandma had a garden too, but zucchini bread was what she grew, what she made, and I can remember eating that as a little kid.
Probably and, despised it, didn't you?
Hell yeah.
Now, Mike, we have to ask Dave the most important question of all in the vegetable world. What is your opinion on kale?
Oh, this has been a really contentious thing.
I have heard
thing.
You talk about kale. And
now, you're supposed to approach it, though, in a non-prejudiced way, not having heard what I've said about kale.
All right, well, I've heard what you've said, but I will, as the state auditor, I will approach this in an unbiased, professional manner.
There you go.
You know, I like the texture of kale. I like it in small doses. But I will say this. I tell you where it's good in. It's good in juice. Have you ever juiced it? I've juiced it before. Now, I put it in a juicer and made juice because I did do a juice diet one time.
I don't understand why.
I did a 60-day juice diet.
That would just concentrate it more.
Why would anybody?
Is that all it was?
Why would anybody want to ruin a good set of collard greens? That's what I want to
know. I would take collards over kale any day.
Oh, amen.
I mean, that's not even close. That wasn't the question, though.
No, that wasn't the question. And you gave a very nuanced opinion of kale.
Well, I mean, I like it in small doses with a little bit of texture, just a little crunch, but I'm not a big fan of the taste, but I have juiced it before with apples.
We didn't have the chief meteorologist in here.
Yeah, Gary Stevenson from Spectrum made us some out of a wok, and it was
It was edible.
It was good. It had beef bouillon and some stuff, and it was good.
You we
cleaned our
plate. Okay, I guess.
Well, you're gonna dress a pig so many
no
times.
No ketchup
so.
On it, but.
I've never heard Andre's views on kale.
Yeah, what do you say? You don't grow any of that up there, do you?
I personally don't, but it certainly is grown up here. I love baby kale.
Baby kale? Maybe you'd like baby kale, Rufus. Maybe it's less bitter.
It's more tender.
More tender?
Oh,
so we'll have to find you some baby kale at the State Farmer's Kale. So you just texted me, Andrea, about the medlar tree. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard of that.
I read about this tree in my current issue of American Horticulture magazine, and I thought, "Wow, I'm going to get this for my husband for Christmas."
Well, what does it do? I mean, what's so special about it?
What's special about it is that it is it's self-fertile, so you don't need a male and a female.
That's too bad.
It's an edible fruit. Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell. I mean, for, you know, those of us who are not Patrick, which are we buying the male and when you need a male and a female tree, separate trees, it's tough to know whether that's actually what you purchased at the nursery.
Well, I don't know that we're getting into that.
It's good. If you also don't have to worry about, you know, the kind of soil that it likes, that's good.
Yeah.
You do need full sun. But it's an edible fruit it produces that tastes and has the consistency of applesauce. Maybe you can make Medlar butter. Who knows?
Medlar butter.
Get enough of them.
So,
and it doesn't grow too high. You know, it's more of a. There are smaller cultivars.
Rufus, you don't have one of these on your property, do you?
I've got a total blank here.
Medlar. It's, so I was curious what Patrick knew about the medlar tree.
Yeah, so medlar is essentially a fancy hawthorn. So if you're familiar with hawthorn, which is kind of like a crab apple.
Yeah.
Which have a mealy sort of textured fruit that doesn't have our wild hawthorns don't have much flavor. They're mostly fat in those fruits. There's not a lot of sugar. But I think you're talking about the Mediterranean medlar, which is got kind of a rich flavor, almost persimmony-like after a frost is when you collect the fruit. But there's another one I have always wanted to grow, and I haven't grown, but I certainly have consumed a lot of it. It's called Tejocote, which is a Mexican Cretigus, Mexican hawthorn.
Does that make tequila?
It makes a special drink called Tejocote, which is a Christmas drink, right? It's an orange fruit, and you see it for sale in places like H Mart or international markets this time of year, kind of an orange fruit, very closely related to the mespalus, the medlar tree. But yeah, it's a neat bunch of fruits out there that we don't take much advantage of, and that's one of them.
The auditor can work, Dave can work this into a conversation on his next stop, I'm sure, traveling the state of North Carolina.
Medlar fruits, no doubt.
All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. Back 9:42 WPTF time. Mike Rayleigh here. Rufus Edmonston, Dr. Patrick McMillan, Andrea Lane is with us, and our state auditor Dave Bolick dropped by this morning, and we're so glad that you came by. We appreciate you listening. You just never know who is listening to this thing that has been on for almost 81 years now.
Oh, it's a great time. Wow. Because a lot of times I'm traveling. And we talked about me coming on. This is one of the few Saturdays I've had a chance to do that.
But
a lot of times I'm on the road during this time slot, so it's great.
Yeah.
And
well,
now you can go on the use your app on the phone and run it through your car, so it doesn't matter where you are.
That's true.
I don't have to be able to reach the signal on 680 or 92.9. I can pull it up on my phone and run it through the radio in the car on the internet.
I've been in Jerusalem, on top of the old wall in Dubrovnik, Croatia, calling into this show in Oslo, Norway.
Yep.
Earlier this year, calling in. I call in and also hear it, and it's just extraordinary technology.
Yeah,
it really is. But I really appreciate that because you have a tough job and are on the go a lot.
Well, it's what you make of it. You know that, Rufus. I mean, any of these council estate jobs, it's all about what you make of it.
That's what I've always said about this job. You just, whatever you make of it, it's just...
Right. Yeah, but look what you've made. The strongest rating of any station around.
We do okay.
Well, you're being modest. Well, this show has good ratings.
It has for 80 years. I mean, John Harris, I don't know if you remember the Tar Heel Gardener.
Oh, yeah.
John Harris, he only had 15 minutes. To do it all.
15 minutes.
15 minutes, and he had 15 minutes for 40 years.
Wow.
He never complained that I know of.
Opening envelopes with dead insects in there.
Yeah, I mean
he leaves and things.
The gentleman had a great sense of humor.
He said, "Well, look what we have here."
Yeah. So God bless him. God rest his soul. He put us on the map here, and we've tried to continue. But it's kind of an eclectic group on the show and also among our listeners. We have all walks of life, so we're very proud of that. But
well, as you know, Rufus, the people of North Carolina are very diverse. You can go from one end of the state to
that
the other.
That is so true.
I mean, it is amazing. I had the chance this week. I mentioned earlier, I was in Hot Springs on Saturday. By Tuesday, I was in Manio. And the difference between the folks in Manio and the folks in Hot Springs is really stark in terms of, you know, their general demeanor and what they do. But I'll tell you what is consistent is their love of the state.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. It is really, really palpable. And then that goes for people that have they were born here like me and you. We're born here, raised here, to people that moved in. It doesn't take long to fall in love with the state of North Carolina. We've just got so much to offer in terms of species of plants, Doc. I mean,
over 4,000.
Yeah. My son, my number two son, lives in Las Vegas, and he says it's he's still going through PTSD.
Yeah, I bet he is.
Poor fella.
He keeps telling me there's no clouds out here, Dad.
Yeah.
Well, no open windows.
There's no clouds and no grass.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, you got to ship that in.
A lot of astroturf. And
find some more.
A lot of astroturf and rocks.
Yeah.
What is you're still traveling a lot. What is next on your agenda?
Well, I'm going to take a few days off for Christmas, and we'll see the family. And then we'll start the year running. We've got a full performance audit that'll be coming out in the coming weeks on the North Carolina Education Lottery. There's a lot of people that have interest in that. So we've taken a deep dive on the lottery to ask some tough questions about the contributions to public education. Because, you know, as I travel the state, I talk to parents who are buying number two pencils and notebook papers for their classrooms, and they ask me, where's the lottery money that's supposed to be coming in to help pay
my
for
my son's
this?
A teacher. My wife was a teacher for 43 years.
So we want to answer those questions and take a look at that. My goal, and I set this as a rule in my office to keep myself on track, is I've got to be out of Raleigh, outside of the Beltway, at least 2 days a week. And most of the time it's more than that, but there's
to find out what's really going on.
Because inside the Beltway, and you know this, everybody here around the table, what's happening inside the Beltway in Raleigh is not really North Carolina. I mean, there's a lot of good people that live inside the Beltway, don't get me wrong, but you know, what's really going on is outside of the government complex, and you've got to get out there to talk to people to make sure that you really understand what's going on. We're opening a Charlotte office, so we'll have that up and going the first of the year, and I'm going to catch the train in Durham at 7 and get to Charlotte by about 9:15.
Oh, that's the way to go.
30. I can get 2 hours of work done on the computer and then get to the office. I'm just going to try to spend a day, a week or so when we first open the office in Charlotte. A lot of folks down there in Mecklenburg County feel like statewide elected officials ignore them until it's election time. They kind of look at Charlotte as its own sort of, you know, the state of Mecklenburg, and you've heard that before. Right?
Yeah, because they're right there on the line.
So I want to get down there and make sure that the folks in Charlotte know that they're part of North Carolina. And
great.
And so, you know, it's going to be good. And look, we've got America 250 coming up, the 250th anniversary of the founding of our country. And there are a lot of activities scheduled throughout the year. Battle of Morse Creek. Battlefield. That was a 250-year-ago battle.
Pender County,
Right up in real Rocky Point in North Carolina. So I'll be there for that celebration. There'll be several parades. We've got some concerts coming up. I went to the the governor had been to Taiwan and Japan on a trade mission, and my good friend, the labor commissioner, Luke Farley, had been to Taiwan on a trade mission as well. And they were given the report at the Council of State, and I was sort of feeling a little slighted.
Why don't y'all let me go?
Right. And so I looked around, and I said, well, guys, I hadn't been to Japan, and I hadn't been to Taiwan, but tell you where I have been. I've been to the battleground in Burlington in Alamance County.
Well, you've been
someplace. And I had been there, and we did a voting in the backwoods, which is a new responsibility, voting in the state auditor's office, which is a whole nother. We could do a three-hour show on that one.
Wow.
But that was fascinating. Cultural Resource is doing a great job with the America 250 stuff, and I learned a lot about the way voting has evolved since even pre pre-English colonization here, as soon as the English came and colonized, they did hold elections back in, you know, the 1750s and 1760s. They had elections. And so it was interesting to see how those elections were rigged back in the day.
I'm sure only the landed gentry voted then.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Only the landed gentry. I had to have 50 acres in order to vote back in 1743, I think. Right. And then that evolved so that tradesmen and stuff could vote by the mid-1760s. But a lot of history here in North Carolina.
No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. We got Don in Durham. Don, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. How can we help you this morning?
I love the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm from Jersey, but it makes me feel like a North Carolinian.
Well, you are, my friend.
I have a boxwood issue.
All right.
They're about 6 feet tall, and I have them in front of my house, and it's starting to die. It's crazy. They're dying in order.
Are they English or American boxwoods?
How do I know?
Yeah. So what exit do you live at in New Jersey, or did you, by the way?
In New Jersey?
Yeah. What was your exit?
100.
Okay. So, Patrick, what say you about this boxwood? Phytophthora or whatever it is.
Phytophthora, yeah.
Phytophthora root rot.
Yeah, which is a fungal problem, can definitely affect boxwoods. But there's all kinds of other things. One of them is boxwood blight, which is just going to suddenly kill it. Volatella blight, root rot, of course, we've talked about. That's what Phytophthora is.
So they like good drainage, boxwoods do.
They do. They like good drainage. Because they're from Mediterranean Europe, too, they do like good drainage. And then most of the forms that we grow are grown to be planted out in places like Allegheny County. We grow a lot of boxwood up there because cool nights and cool weather is much better for boxwoods. So in places like the Piedmont of North Carolina, we've switched a lot of what we're planting from boxwoods to get that sort of foundational hedge effect that we get from boxwoods to planting things like Stokes Dwarf Yaupon Holly, which is a native well-adapted species, grows super thick. You never have to trim it, you know, other than take off the odd growth. But I imagine you're either looking at blight or root rot with the boxwoods. And how long have they been established in?
Oh, it had been at least 40. I've been here 20.
Okay.
They've been at least here 40 years.
Okay.
And this is, you know what's strange? They are dying from left to right on the plant.
Yeah.
It dies slowly across the plant.
Yeah, and
are they
just turning brown all of a sudden, like the leaves start to turn brown towards the tip and then work its way back? Yeah, and they just brown all of a sudden. That sounds to me like you're probably dealing with boxwood blight.
Is there any way to treat that, or is it?
Well, it's a fungus, Calenectria pseudonaviculata. I'm reading that, though. I don't think I know.
Is it a blight?
Don't believe that I know
that. Is it a blight that affects the foliage or the root system? Or?
There's no cure for infected plant, so prevention sanitation, like most of the fungal diseases.
So it means if that's what you have to pull them up, Don.
Yeah. And the way it spreads, Don, is that like the leaves, as they fall off the plant, that holds the fungus, and so it spreads from plant to plant. And so probably you're dealing with a fungal issue, I would think, or a pathogen issue for sure, particularly because you said it's moving from left to right. If the plant on the left was the first to get it, then it would obviously spread to its closest neighbor first, just like like having the flu in a household. Yeah. Whoever's closest is going to get it first.
Well, I have found it in my boxwoods, Don, that if I ever had a blight spot.
Cut it out.
Cut it out immediately. Cut it out immediately. And if it got too big, pull the whole thing out because it will spread.
Yeah.
Andrea, do you have anything to add?
I do not.
Okay.
I do see Patrick's explanation of the boxwood growing well, needing the cooler night temperatures, explains to me why I do see a lot of boxwood hedges up here. in the mountains.
Yeah.
And just like this gentleman is describing, you know, the hedges, this is on various friends' properties. They've lived in the houses for 20, 30 years, and the boxwood was there before them.
Yeah.
And they are suddenly dying in the same way.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like boxwood blight reached Mitchell County last year.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the big issues with any pathogen like this, and, you know, you're always surprised when we have a really healthy plant that's grown for a long time, and all of a sudden it drops dead.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Durham's climate's not the same as it was 40 years ago, and we've had to shift what we grow. You know, hosta, which is still going to grow great for Andrea up there in the mountains, you have to really be careful which varieties you plant down here in the Piedmont, because our nights just aren't cool enough to keep them happy. And so as weather changes and weather patterns change, you get stress on plants, and just like us, just like human beings, when you're stressed, you're more susceptible to disease. And so what we're seeing a lot nowadays is old landscape plants that have just been beautiful for so many years are coming down with diseases we never really thought of before. And, you know, there's other things that you can do to prevent a lot of problems in your landscape. I learned this the hard way this year. I had probably 140 beauty berries planted out. We have a new pest in the area on crepe myrtles called crepe myrtle scale.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen it on some trees in the in the triangle area. And it Calicarpa, our native beauty berry, has no defense against it. This insect is from the natural range of, it's from Asia, it's not from here. And so the scale insect infects the beauty berry, weakens the beauty berry, but it's also a sucking insect like an aphid. And any plant that's near that infected beauty berry, that might have something like cucumber mosaic virus, which got into our beauty berry, gets into the beauty berry, suddenly have cucumber mosaic virus on one, you got a bunch of stressed out plants, and you've got an insect that's sticking its little mouth parts into the plant, pulling out virus and taking it to the nearby plant, and suddenly we had cucumber mosaic virus everywhere. And just like these fungal problems, viral problems, you can cut out fungal problems. You can try to keep it clean underneath the boxwoods, underneath anything you have a fungal problem with. But viral and fungal problems are really difficult to treat. And a lot of times, if they're like this boxwood blight, your best bet is to, just like you're treating it like a cancer, you're going to cut it out. You're going to take the plants out that are infected, and you're going to cut even the edge of where healthy plants might come into contact with those plants that are infected, and then pray.
Yeah. So you have a lot of decisions to make, Don.
Yeah, well, I want to make sure I was going the right way.
Yeah.
Well, Don, I have to tell you about a boxwood one time that kept getting darker and darker, and I traced it down to my good old faithful dog, Moses.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
he
okay.
was using the boxwood.
Increasing the nitrogen content.
Yeah, and so I did not remove him. I said, just let him have his own boxwood to
there you go.
Do that.
Mr. Auditor, are you going to be able to stick
Thank
around
you very
with
much.
Us? Or?
I can.
Thank you, Don.
Sure.
Okay, well, you're welcome as long as you want to stay.
As long as you want to keep me
no,
here.
No, you I'll stay go. Here as long as you want to. You're busy. All right. Well, Don, thank you. Joel, hang on. We'll talk to you after the news here on WPTF's Weekend Gardener.